Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve.
You know, we sometimes hear about wildfires in California, and they can actually be very dangerous for the people who live there. When the conditions are right, they can spread fast. They can spread like wildfire. That's how wildfires spread. One fire had actually claimed about 24 lives, and USA Today had an article on it. They interviewed Sergeant Conrad Grayson, who was in charge of evacuation, trying to get everyone out of their homes. And in this interview, he said, "We are begging people to leave, but they won't take us seriously." That they feel like, it's not that bad. They can fight the fire with their garden hose. I got this. He said, if these people don't move fast, they are going to become charcoal briquettes. Now, I think that sometimes we can be like that. Not with wildfires, but with our lives. Like, someone could show us this problem we have and alert us to this danger we're in and beg us to get help, and we'd be like, nah, I'm okay. It's not that bad. I got this. We're in this series called The Deep Down Dark, and I am asking you, in those places where your life is desperate, I'm encouraging you in those desperate places, in those desperate moments, with those desperate relationships, to cry out to God for help. And honestly, what is standing in the way for some of you, standing in the way of you finally getting past that bad situation, standing in the way of you finally experiencing God's blessing, is that you won't cry out to Him for help. You're still trying to fix it on your own. Still, your garden hose, I got this. No, you don't. Put down the hose and cry out to God. Go to God and pray a desperate prayer, and what you'll learn is that God is drawn to desperation. In this series, we're looking at people in the Bible who were desperate and who turned to God and experienced this truth that God was there for them. And we're learning together that there is a gift of desperation. You know, desperation is what no one wants, but everyone needs, because when we're desperate, we turn to God and we often experience Him and know Him in a way we never would have otherwise. Today we're going to see another desperate person in the Bible. His name is Jacob. Eventually we're going to be in Genesis chapter 32. We'll put all the Bible verses on the screen for you. And if you don't own an easy-to-read translation of the Bible, we give them out for free at the Velcro bar. In Genesis 32, we're going to see Jacob in this crazy, weird wrestling match. But to appreciate the wrestling match, we need some context. So I'm going to catch you up on Jacob's life. And it's, I got to warn you, it's pretty nuts, okay? So Jacob's parents were Isaac and Rachel, and they had twin boys, Jacob and Esau. Esau is a little older than Jacob. In fact, just a couple of minutes older, but those few minutes were very significant. Back then, the oldest son would get a special blessing from his father when his father was close to dying. And then after his father died, he would get a special inheritance called the birthright. It was the way their culture worked, and it was a very big deal. And so Jacob misses out on the special blessing and the special birthright inheritance by just a few minutes. Well, turns out these two boys, Jacob and Esau, they're twins, but they could not be more different. Esau is like an outdoorsman and a hunter. Jacob is more indoorsy. Is that a word? He's indoorsy. And in Genesis chapter 25, the Bible says that Isaac, the father, loved Esau more. So at birth, Jacob missed out on being the one who would eventually get the blessing, and now he's not getting his father's approval either. So Jacob grows up in this home, hearing all about God's blessing to his grandfather Abraham and how it was passed down to his father Isaac and how it's going to be passed down to his brother Esau. Well, Jacob found a way, a conniving kind of way, to steal his brother's birthright, the special inheritance that he would get after his father passed. But he decides that he wants Esau's blessing too. And so he comes up with a way to cheat his brother out of the blessing. Basically, Isaac, the dad, is getting really old and he's getting pretty blind. He's pretty much confined to his bed. And so Jacob decides to pretend to be Esau. He puts on Esau's clothes. He even puts goat hair on his arms because his brother had hairy arms. And I'm just thinking, he must have been really hairy. Like, how hairy is a guy that goat hair is the way? I don't know. But he goes in, he pretends to be Esau, and he says, "Dad, it's time to give me the blessing." And his father feels his arms and he's like, "Yeah, it's Esau." And he gives Jacob the blessing. Well, soon Esau comes in and Isaac, the father, realizes what's happened and he says, "I am so sorry. Your brother was here. He tricked me. I gave him the blessing." Look what the Bible says about Esau's reaction to that. Genesis chapter 27, verse 36. He says, "Now he has cheated me twice. First he took my rights as the firstborn, and now he has stolen my blessing." Jacob hears how angry Esau is, and he's like, "Whoa." And so he knows Esau is not going to let this go easy, and he wonders, is it possible that Esau might just kill me? And so what does Jacob do? Well, he doesn't deal with the situation. He should have. He doesn't have the difficult conversation. He should have. He doesn't humble himself and admit that what he did was wrong. Should have. No, instead, he runs away. He runs. And he runs to his uncle Laban's. And he starts living at his uncle Laban's house. And he starts working for him. And he falls in love with Laban's daughter, Rachel. And he agrees that he will work for Laban for 7 years if he can have Rachel's hand in marriage. Laban agrees, but really, Laban wants his older daughter, who we're told is less attractive, to get married first. Her name is Leah. She wore her hair in buns on the side of her head, and she wore this gold bikini she would lay... Okay, I'm totally confusing these stories. That's not true at all. We're told that Leah was less attractive, and so Laban's like, technically the older daughter should get married first, and I don't know if anyone's ever going to fall in love with Leah. And so he comes up with a way to trick Jacob into marrying Leah. What happened back then is you would have this big wedding feast. Everyone would come, you'd eat this great meal, and then the bride and groom would go into a tent where they would consummate the marriage. And whoever you consummated the marriage with, that's who you were married to. And so Jacob's in the tent, and Laban, Uncle Laban, sends Leah in there instead of Rachel, and Jacob doesn't realize it. How does he not realize it? I don't know. I wasn't there. It was dark. Maybe there was some alcohol involved. Maybe he was in a hurry. I don't know. I wasn't there. But he doesn't know who's in the tent with him, and he sleeps with her anyway. And the next morning, the verse in the Bible is great. It says, "In the morning, there was Leah." He's like, "Oh, whoops." And so he realizes, "I married the wrong one." He's angry. He goes to Laban, and they make this agreement that he will work for another 7 years if he can marry Rachel too. So he does. And all he ends up working for 20 years for Laban. There's this growing tension the whole time. And so what does Jacob do? He doesn't deal with the situation. He should have. He doesn't have the difficult conversation. He should have. Instead, he finds a way again to manipulate the situation and get what he wants. He comes up with this scheme that allows him to take half of Laban's livestock as his own. And so now he's kind of rich and he runs. That's what he does. He runs. In the middle of the night, he gets his wives and his kids and his livestock, and he runs. Laban finds out and takes chase, finally catches up to him. He's like, "What are you doing?" Jacob says, "I was scared, so I ran." Of course he did. That's what Jacob does. He runs. Well, they have this fight. Let me ask you, though, do you relate to Jacob? You might be thinking, "Relate to Jacob. I never put goat hair on my arms. I didn't marry the wrong girl in the tent." But I think we all can. But because I think we can all look back in our life and see a cycle of manipulating people, maybe trying to control situations, maybe doing things we shouldn't have done to get things that we wanted. And then when the consequences were coming, running from them. I think we can all relate to Jacob. So Jacob and Laban are out there in the middle of the night fighting, and finally they settle the dispute. But Laban says, listen, you need to leave and you need to never come back. If you come back, there will be problems. Leave. And so that means Jacob has to head west. West is where he's from. West is where his brother Esau still lives. It's been 20 years. Jacob doesn't know, has he forgiven me? Does he still want to kill me? Might he kill me? And so it's Jacob. And once again, what he does is he comes up with a plan. He sends some messengers ahead to Esau's house, hoping that to smooth things out by offering a bunch of gifts to Esau. The messengers go see him, and then they come back. Genesis 32, verses 25 and 26. Genesis 32, verse 6. After delivering the message, the messengers returned to Jacob and reported, "We met your brother Esau, and he is already on his way to meet you with an army of 400 men. That's not good, right? Uh-oh. And so look at the next verse. Jacob was terrified at the news. So what does he do? Well, he can't run this time, because if he goes the other way, that's Laban, right? He can't go that way. And so he manipulates the situation just like he always does, just like he had in the past. Instead of going to Esau and dealing with the situation, he should have. Instead of having the difficult conversation, he should have. Jacob comes up with a plan to minimize his losses. Here's his plan. He splits his wives, kids, and all of his possessions into two different groups, and he sends them each west, but on different routes. He hangs out in camp by himself, and he watches, and his plan is to watch and see who Esau's army of men attack, and then he'll join the other group and try to escape. Great plan, right? It's like, I'll only sacrifice half of my family. And so he sends out these two groups. He stays back in the camp, waiting to see what happens. And this is when the crazy wrestling match happens. Look at verse 24. This left Jacob all alone in the camp. And a man came and wrestled with him until the dawn began to break. What the heck? What is going on? A man came and wrestled with him. Is it Hulk Hogan? John Cena? What exactly is going on here? Well, if we keep reading the story later, the man is revealed to be an angel of the Lord. Most Bible scholars, people who are a lot smarter than me, tell us that when you see angel of the Lord in the Old Testament of the Bible, it's usually a reference to Jesus making an appearance in the Old Testament. So Jesus came to earth and lived life as a man later, but he's always existed and apparently makes a few cameo appearances on earth in the Old Testament, okay? So it's like Jacob is standing there all alone when poof, he gets tackled by Jesus and finds himself in a wrestling match with God. That has to be a little intimidating and a little scary, and I'm sure Jacob was tempted to do what he always did, run. But this time he doesn't run. For once in his life, he doesn't run. Look at the next verse, verses 25 and 26. When the man, that's the angel of the Lord, saw that he would not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and wrenched it out of its socket. Then the man said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Jacob won't run. In fact, he refuses to quit until God blesses him. Next verses. "What is your name?" the man asked. He replied, "Jacob." "Your name will no longer be Jacob," the man told him. "From now on, you will be called Israel, because you have fought with God and with men and have won." "Please tell me your name," Jacob said. "Why do you want to know my name?" the man replied. Then he blessed Jacob there. Jacob doesn't run. He wrestles with God, and he comes out blessed. There's a couple things I want to make sure that you notice in this odd story. First, Jacob wrestles with God when he is desperate and all alone. The truth is, he has had some business to do with God for a while, but he has avoided it. Now he is desperate and he is all alone. And my guess is that Jacob did not do all alone very well or very often. Right? He has not spent his life contemplating. He has spent his life working. He worked to earn a blessing from his father, and then he worked for his uncle Laban. He has worked his whole life to get what he wants. And honestly, that's the way a lot of men handle life. They work, they try to prove themselves, they try to earn their way, the whole time ignoring what's going on the inside. Maybe ignoring their relationship with God. Jacob worked a lot. And he had two wives, and he had lots of children, and he had servants and cattle. His life was noisy. He was probably never by himself. He always had something to do. And we can be like that too, right? Our lives are busy, and we fill them with noise and people and distractions. I just read how many times a day the average person checks their phone. Let's play a little guessing game, just out loud. How many times a day do you think the average person checks their phone? Shout it out. I heard 50 a couple times. I heard 90. Ready? 221 times a day. You're probably average. You probably check your phone about 221 times a day. All alone is not something we do really well. We tend to surround ourselves with noise and distractions and busyness. But if you would just be quiet long enough, if you would just sit still long enough, I think you might find Jesus come running up and tackling you. I think you might realize that God has been trying to get your attention. And there are some things that you need to deal with him. For Jacob, I think this was probably the first time he had been all alone in a long time. And he has done some things in his life. He has done some awful things. Things he should have taken to God, confessed to God, dealt with God. And the truth is, he avoided that. And because he ran from it, until those things were finally addressed, I don't know if it would be possible for him to really be blessed by God. I actually think the same is true for a lot of us. You know, maybe we've been asking for God for blessing in certain areas of our lives. Like, I'm praying and I want this, or I'm asking God to do this. But the truth is, there are things that we probably need to address first. But we don't want to. We don't like to think about those things. We don't like to talk about those things. We don't like the way it makes us feel. And so we want God's blessing, and we ask for God's blessing, and we pray for God's blessing. But maybe we haven't received it because there are things that need to be addressed first. And I don't know, that might sound weird to you with God, but this totally makes sense. Like, think about it this way. If you had a friend, and let's say that you wanted your friend to bless you in some way, to do like a big favor for you. You wanted your friend to do something for you. But the last thing you did to your friend was something awful. Like, you did something really bad, and you have not talked about it. You did not apologize. You haven't addressed it. You probably wouldn't expect your friend to do this big favor for you, right? In fact, you probably wouldn't even feel comfortable asking him for it because you'd know, I need to first address what I did. See, we recognize that when we have a problem with another person, we need to deal with it or it's awkward. But sometimes we miss that in our relationship with God. And so maybe there's something we've never addressed with God. Maybe there's a sin we need to confess, but we've just ignored it. Like, we know that God is loving. He is. We know that God is forgiving. He is. And so we've just felt like, well, yeah, I did that thing. in high school. I did that thing in college. I've been doing that thing for years. I did that thing this Friday night, but it's not a big deal. I mean, God's loving and God's forgiving. And what happens is days go by and then weeks go by and months go by and then years go by. And for some reason, we feel more and more distant from God. And we ask God for things and it seems like he's not answering. And maybe it's because we've got some business that we need to do with him. Maybe we need to get all alone and finally address what needs to be addressed. That's what Jacob did. So, first thing I want you to notice, Jacob didn't wrestle with God till he was alone and desperate. Second thing I want you to notice is that he didn't wrestle with God until he had nowhere else to run. Desperation usually sets into our lives when we feel like we're out of options, right? That's when it's like, oh boy, this is bad. And a lot of people don't turn to God until they have nowhere else to turn. As a pastor, I hear this from people. People say to me things like, you know, I believed in God and I prayed to God, but it wasn't until I got desperate that I really cried out to God and experienced God. It's like this verse that we've looked at each week of the series. Now, this guy named David prays in Psalm 34:6. He says, in my desperation, I prayed. It's what people often do when they're desperate. They pray. We cry out to him. And when we do, we experience the truth of the rest of that passage. The next verse a little bit down says, the Lord hears his people when they call to him for help. He rescues them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. Isn't that an amazing promise God gives us? The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. There's a guy named Jerry Sitzer. And Jerry Sitzer was a professor at Whitworth College. Some years ago, Jerry was in a car accident. The minivan he was driving was hit by a drunk driver. And in an instant, he lost 3 generations of women in his life. His mother, his wife, and his daughter all died instantly. He wrote a book about trying to get through that and dealing with that. I love the title of the book. It's called A Grace Disguised. A Grace Disguised. Now, in this series, we've been talking about how there's a gift of desperation. Desperation is the gift no one wants, but everyone needs. That a lot of times, it's not until we're desperate that we can experience God in a way that we never have before. And I love what he writes, this observation Sitzer makes in the book. He writes, the quickest way for anyone to reach the sun and the light of day is not to run west, chasing after the setting sun, but to head east, plunging into the darkness until one comes to the sunrise. Does that make sense? It's like, we see the darkness setting on us. We see the deep, down, dark coming at us. And by instinct, we want to run away from it. And so we do. We head west to get away from the darkness. Okay, it may be that you're trying to outrun some of the consequences of actions that you've taken, or you're trying to outrun relational issues. And so you run away from them. We run because we want to get to the light. But what if the fastest way to the light is to plunge into the darkness, to deal with this thing that we don't want to deal with? That's essentially what happens with Jacob. He just can't run anymore. He couldn't, and so he fights. He fights through the darkness. He doesn't give up fighting until he gets the blessing. There's a couple things I wanted to make sure you notice in the story. And there are a couple things that Jacob gets out of wrestling with God. Okay, 2 things that Jacob receives from this bizarre all-night-long wrestling match with God. First, he's blessed. He's blessed. You know, something that's really interesting to me, if you read through Jacob's life, before this wrestling with God incident, every time he prays to the God of his father, Isaac, and of his father, Abraham. That's how he prays. He would pray to the God of my father, Isaac, and the God of his father, Abraham. It's like he needed his own experience with God because his experience with God was mostly just based on his heritage. His faith was passed down to him. Really, it was more theirs than his. But he experiences this desperate moment, and finally he has his own experience with God. He encounters God for himself. And as we've been learning, in our desperation, we receive this gift, and it turns out the gift is God. Jacob encounters God, and he receives God's blessing. And remember, his whole life, all he's wanted was a blessing, right? He wanted the blessing from his father, but he never really got it. He wanted a specific blessing from Uncle Laban, and he didn't get it. Finally here, he receives the blessing, and he receives it from God. And so we should ask the question, like, what did he do different? Because he didn't receive the blessing here, but finally he receives the blessing. What did he do different? He didn't run. For the first time in his life, he didn't run. He stopped running. We could say that he fought for the blessing, but really, I think all he did in that wrestling match was hang on to God and refuse to let go. And I want to tell you, that is not a bad idea when you find yourself wrestling with God. Just hang on and don't let go. There's a lady who's been coming to our church for maybe a year or so named Mel O. She goes by Mel O. And last fall, I had this long, like hour-long conversation with her. And in this conversation, she told me about this horrible series of circumstances she's been going through for about 3 years. She's been wronged by her work, her boss, by people financially, like really bad, like lawsuit-level stuff, like bad. And she was really wrestling with God. And she was very new to faith. And so she was asking questions like, why would God let this happen to me? If God is loving, why would he let this happen? And why won't God answer the prayers that I'm asking of him? And like, is this God thing even worth it? And I listened for a long time. And finally, I said, man, I just want to encourage you, hold on. Just hold on. Keep wrestling with God. And I didn't know if she would, but I prayed she would. It was October. Last month in April, we did baptisms. Baptism is like a ceremony where someone publicly accepts Jesus and puts their faith in God in front of a bunch of people. And this lady I talked to, Mel O, she got baptized. And before she got baptized, she had a chance to share her story. And I listened attentively because I remembered the conversation back in October. And she started talking about the same things, about how she'd been wronged by her boss. And she really was. I mean, just this horrible series of things that had happened to her, put her in a really bad situation. And then she said, I am so, so glad that all of that happened to me because all of that is what led me to God. And it's what led me to this moment. And I wouldn't trade this for anything. Man, I love that. Like, it was challenging for her, but she grabbed onto God and she would not let go. And it has changed her because she hung in there. She got the blessing. And God has a gift for you when you are in the deep down dark. Don't run from him. Wrestle with him. You grab onto him and you hold on to him and you don't let go. You don't let go until you get the blessing. Two things come out of Jacob's wrestling match with God. First, he's blessed. And second, he walks away with a limp. It's interesting. When you read this story, I don't know if any of you had this question, but when I read this story, it's like, okay, wait. So Jacob is wrestling with God. How does Jacob hold his own? Like wrestling, it doesn't seem like Jacob would be a good match for God. It seems kind of silly. Well, we get a glimpse into what kind of effort this angel of the Lord is putting into the wrestling match when in verse 25, it says that the angel touched Jacob's hip. And the word that's translated touch, it means like a gentle touch. The angel gently touched his hip and it completely wrenched his hip out of socket. You read that and you're like, oh, I don't think this angel was trying really hard the rest of the wrestling match. Like he was just kind of letting Jacob stay in the, now, okay, I get it. Jacob got his hip wrenched out of socket and he would walk with a limp for the rest of his life. And this is the odd thing about wrestling with God. You get a blessing and you get a limp. And that limp that Jacob walked with, it would always be a reminder to him of the blessing, right? It's like he's got scars now. But his scars remind him of his experience with God. And some of you understand that. But because you walked in here today with a limp, you've got some scars. But those scars you have, they tell a story. Right? You went through something painful, something you would never choose. It wasn't fun, and you had to wrestle through it. But it brought you closer to God. And there is a real sense in which you were blessed by what happened. I don't know because the Bible doesn't tell us, but I have to imagine that Jacob, for years to come, loved telling the story of that night when he got tackled by and started wrestling God. Have you ever had that friend who you hang out with them enough that you start to hear one of their stories like 100 times? Like they tell that they go launch into the story again. You're like, oh, here we go. Like you've heard this story so many times. I bet Jacob's friends heard the story of him wrestling with God over and over and over. And my guess is that they loved to hear him tell that story. Because there is something compelling about a person who has a story of the time that they wrestled with God. And you need that story. Maybe it's time for you to have that story to tell. Maybe you don't have it because the truth is you've been trying to control the situation. You've been trying to manipulate the situation. It's not that bad. I got this. Or you've been running from it. And what's going to happen is it will catch up to you, right? It's coming. And so it's time to stop running. It's time to wrestle with God. And I'm not saying that it won't be painful because I think it will be. And I'm not saying that you won't have a limp because I think you will. But you will also receive a gift from God. You'll be blessed. And so, you don't run. It's hard. You choose not to run. Instead, you grab onto God and you hold on and you don't let go. You don't let go. We're gonna give you a few minutes right now to do this, to do business with God. And the truth is, I don't know exactly where you're at with all this. Maybe some of you, you're like, man, I am so new to this God thing. You kind of jumped in the deep end and I'm not there yet. Like, I honestly don't even know what it would look like for me to have a relationship with God. I don't get that. If that's you, can I please strongly encourage you, can I invite you to take next step? Next step is 4 1-hour experiences. We're offering them in June on Wednesday night, starting on June 6th. So not this Wednesday, but next Wednesday from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, 1 hour long. I lead them. You get to hang out with me. Kind of awesome. And the really awesome thing, though, is that you will learn what it looks like, what it really could look like for you to be in a growing relationship with God, to be led by God, to have intimacy with God, and to have a life that matters, that makes a difference for God. And so, man, that would be the best next step if you're like still trying to figure all this stuff out. Or maybe what you need to do to wrestle with God in these next few minutes, starting in these next few minutes, is maybe there's something you did in high school, something you did in college, something you've been doing for years, something you did on Friday night, and you've never talked to God about it, you've never asked forgiveness. Or maybe there's something you haven't been doing. Like maybe you've been walking with God for a while, and there's some things that God asked you to do, and you've just decided that it's okay for you to not do them. And whatever it is, you've been ignoring it, and it's time to head into the darkness and to wrestle with God. And He's got a gift for you there. So I'm going to pray, and then we're going to give you that time. And during this time, we also have communion available. And this is the power of communion, really. Communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice that represent Jesus' body and blood given on the cross for us. And it's a way that we can remember the sacrifice Jesus made. Communion reminds us that when we were at our very worst, when we were stuck in our sin and running from God, God still loved us so much, He sent Jesus. And so we don't need to be afraid to confess our sin to Him, because He is a God who loves us and who loves to forgive us. And so we can go to Him with confidence, and we can deal with whatever we need to deal with. And so if you'd like to take communion, it's available on the candlelit tables around the room. You certainly don't have to if you're not ready for that. But if you'd like to, you get the bread and juice, bring them back to your seat. And when you're ready, you can take them. Okay? So I'm going to pray, and then we'll give you time to do your business with God. God, thank You for being a God who loves us. You know, as we hear Jacob's story, there's so much that we cannot relate to. And then I think there are a few things that we can relate to. I bet we've all done things to get something we want that we're now ashamed of. I bet we've all tried to manipulate people, control people, and I think we've all spent time in our life running from You. And You love us, and You are inviting us to come to You. And so I think if we just get quiet, we would find out that You've been trying to get our attention and that You want to wrestle with us, because You want to give us a blessing. And we may need to plunge into the darkness to receive it. So God, would You help us to give us confidence to do that, knowing that we have a God who loves us no matter what. We have a God who came for us and died for us. We have a God who loves us no matter what we're going through, and after we've gone through it, Your love is still there. We have a God who sent Jesus, and we pray all these things in His name. Amen.